Seth Merrow joins us. And Seth, good morning.
Good morning. We're back in New York. You got to like that. Things are returning to normal. Some sense of normal, not normal, but we're getting to some sense of it anyway.
Well, you know, Tina and I have been through Saratoga several times in the last 10 days, and as recently as, I guess it was on Sunday, when did I go, and she wasn't with me, but I'm losing track, must have been either, I had to go into Saratoga, when was that, maybe Friday, and there were a lot of shops open. You know, the retail shops, the boutiques and stuff. And that, I thought that was a pretty helpful sign, that, you know, we're getting closer, to, you know, to, and of course, this week, the reopening of, the Oklahoma of the training track. So,
yeah.
We're getting there.
Yeah, horse is actually back in Saratoga, so that's a good sign, too.
Well, and then, of course, we'll talk in a minute about Belmont, and I'm assuming you did Belmont today. You didn't get taken in by Tampa, did you?
Well, I did everything because I'm on TV, but I put the picks up for Belmont when I put up the Twitter picks.
You're back on TV, and so, boy, Seth, this is problematic. I mean, do we watch Fox's America's Day at the Races, or do we watch you?
Well, I'm biased, of course, but back and forth, little back and forth. Get a low on one, and go to the other.
That's true. We do a commercial thing, like when you send it to commercial, we go to Fox, and when Fox commercials, we come back to you.
Maybe like, here's an idea. What? The magazines you get on the grocery store, well, like People and Us, they have the Who Wore It Better, and they have, and I always laugh because it's celebrities in clothes, but they're wearing the same outfit. But I say celebrity in quotes because I may be out of it these days. I don't know half of them, but maybe that's the thing. We'll have Who Picked It Better, and so you stick with the station of whoever's picking it better.
Well, see, but you're doing it on the fly, you know. You're watching the board, and you're sensing the way the track. Not that Andy and the team doesn't do that, but it's fun to listen to you because you talk out your thinking, and
That's what you got to do. That's the fun part of being able to do it live. Yeah. I mean, I'm basing it on the picks I've made prior, but. But there are times when you look up at the board and you say, yeah, okay, this guy's my top pick, but yikes, 1-5? And particularly you get to these $5,000 conditional claimers and you see the betting public make horse 1-5, it's like, boy, that's God bless you.
That's a part of it. I mean, sometimes when you get the very short price, it's a blessing if you're a multi-race player and you feel like it's a place to stand. I mean, there's plenty of people philosophically who are quite willing to go against, actually, and that's the place where they zig when everybody else is zagging. I mean, that can pay off too. But if you're of a limited budget, you do want to rely occasionally on those short prices. I mean, that's actually a good point.
Can be helpful. So that's worth discussion because I get people a lot of times. There are days where I have favorites on top, and I think you have to know how the public handicapper you're watching is handicapping. And I'm a guy who, when I handicap for the night before looking, I'm looking at the way I think they're going to come under the wire, not necessarily the way I would bet on the win end. And a lot of other handicappers do it that way. They're looking for the value. I think they're both valid. But I'm looking the way they come under the wire and then look at the board later on because of just what you said. I don't, these days, with all the options, I don't know how people bet. So the 6-5 shot that nobody wants to touch on the win end, maybe somebody's single in a pick five, and everybody has different strategies. So I just keep it straight. Here's how I think they're going to come under the wire. You look at the board and the way you're betting, you decide. And then I, when I have comments, like I've been doing on Twitter, you try to make it, or if I'm talking on TV, you try to make it clear, gee, I think these two, my two top picks, I think, are pretty closely matched. I could have gone either way. And at that point, if the top pick is 6-5 and the second choice is 8-1, you kind of know where the obvious is. If you think they're evenly matched and they're that spread in the odds, you know where the win bet goes. You know the horses, you probably want both of them in a pick bet. So you try to make it clear that odds-wise, you know, you can go in a, you can zig when other people are zagging in this particular race, because I also try to parse out, boy, this is a very competitive race, other races where, okay, this 4-5 is probably legitimate 4-5. Those types, and as I say, those types of things are based on my looking and saying, here's how I think they're going to come under the wire. But you have to also look at the odds when you're making the final bet.
Well, and this is, you know, we're not ever trying, I'm never trying to beat anybody up when it comes to, you know, what is identified as a problematic morning line. And, you know, it's not an easy job, but it is, it can get very frustrating, actually, for a player if you're strategizing. And I suppose, Seth, this gets, and you and I have had this discussion, this gets into the whole concept of making your own line, and it, you know, that way you're not as influenced potentially as you might be, you know, looking at the morning line that's emanating from the track. And you know, I think we know, you know, that there's certain venues where that the morning line is simply askew. And it is important, I think, that when you're doing your pass through, like for instance, I had this discussion with Gus the other day, because I had left a horse off that I thought was an AE, but in fact was in the body of the race. But when I printed the early past performances, it seemed like I had mentally thought that a certain horse that was deep in the PPs was an AE. Anyway, I print the PPs before, you know, literally the night that the races are drawn. And that way I don't have a morning line imprinted on the PPs. And so I can go through the races. And I recommend this, honestly, even if you're inexperienced, go through the races yourself without a morning line on them and not knowing the morning line, and give yourself a read. And, you know, even if you were to write down, you know, the top three contenders and the next two or three, you know, price options, you know, this way you're not mentally pointed in a direction that a morning line might lead you. And in fact, I saw where Denk, Alan Dinkinson, wrote the other day, you know, a bad morning line is a problem. And that's why, because it influences your thinking.
Yeah, I have to say, I usually like to print them up with the post position number and the morning line, but I don't pay any attention to the morning line. I may look at it after I've made all of my selections in a race where I'm kind of curious of who the morning line favorite might be. I don't change things up based on that, but that, all of that said, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I started playing some of these contests the last few weeks when I was kind of in the shutdown mode. And I like the pick and pray format because it kind of takes that swing out of the last race or two for some people. You have to kind of legitimately handicap. But those pick and pray contests, you kind of have to rely on the morning line. And so there have been a couple of situations where I've made a choice. You know, you look at one and it may be 7-2 and you're kind of willing to accept that in a contest. And then, you know, it gets to race time and you're looking at 8-5 and all of a sudden it's not quite as attractive as you would have liked. It went maybe below what you would have wanted to accept there. So, but I agree with what you said. There are some guys out there who kind of nail the morning line, and there are other tracks where they don't. But all of that said, not a job I'd want to do because it's a minefield making the morning line.
Well, let's slip into the Belmont action and get some of Seth's thoughts. There's a couple of notable scratches that are already up. Andy sent them out, and 55 has come out of the stake, actually. Chad taking the New York bread out. So the two in the ninth is out. The two other notable scratches, Fashion Star, the sixth, is out of the sixth race. And Fashion Star from Shug looked like there was some merit. And you can also scratch Jeremiah's Box of Rain, who was a popular price option in the seventh race. I mean, those are the ones that, particularly in the pick five, that you might want to be aware of. And I didn't look at the earlier races as much as I did races 5 through 10. So be aware. And I'm just looking. There's a couple of MTOs. They're holding the MTOs in case the weather worsens. There is thunderstorms after 2 o'clock forecast, including some high wind and hail type thunderstorms. So FYI, we may have to tap dance through day one here. But Seth, let's get some thoughts. Pick a couple of spots. And in fact, that sixth race that starts the pick five place that I'd like to hear what you're doing.
I'll just give you a couple quick before that. I just want to mention Fauci today, you know, coming out of the quarantine. Yep. He'll be a horse that'll attract just some, maybe if he wins, maybe some mainstream attention, but that's the third race. I like Prisoner in there, though, but that one's not going to offer much value. I think those two are going to take the attention, but I like Violence a lot as a first outsider, and there was a little win early on the dam side too, so I like Prisoner a little bit, but Fauci in the third will be fun to watch. And I'm not sure how you pronounce it in the fifth. I'm going with Ramon, but Caracanti is kind of an interesting win early sire. Of course, didn't live up to it in the debut, but that was on the dirt back in the middle of March at Aqueduct. I think moving to the turf, this horse might move up in the second career start. You're getting 12-1 morning line there on Ramon, so that's another interesting one for me. That's the fifth race. Sixth, I lost my top pick in there, the 12 scratched out. I had English Soul on top, but I went 1, 7, and 4 after that. And again, you lose a little confidence when your top pick goes out and you move things up. But I had the Chad Klarovich runner, lightly raced, has been showing a lot of potential, now comes back. I'd say it a lot, two-year-olds or three-year-olds, lightly raced like this, when they get a break and come back, I always think the potential is there to come back even improved from what we've seen. And if this one does, becomes tough. Barica underneath for Danny Gargan. There's some recency there, obviously, with the middle of April win down at Gulfstream. And then the four, Say Hey, the European import for Christophe Clement, that maybe he'll be okay in the United States debut at a price with Joel Rosario riding. And that's part of, I mean, this whole meet's going to be a puzzle. We've never had a break like this, not never, but we haven't had a break like this in New York since the inner track. So you have a lot of horses that are coming off a little bit of a layoff, some of them longer layoffs because they haven't got a chance. They've gotten a chance to get started so far this year. But I'll also toss out there are going to be some jockeys that may have to work a little rust off, too. At least a few of these haven't really been riding during the break anywhere, so that'll add a little piece to the puzzle this afternoon down in New York, too.
Press through, actually, and what'd you do in the seventh?
Seventh, I have it 10, 4, 1, and 6 inside info. I thought the Brad Cox runner, clearly last year with George Weaver, they had some ambition for this horse. Sixth in the debut, but then they tried the stakes race up at Finger Lake. So they had some confidence in this horse. Now come back for the 30 tag. Maybe there's mixed signals there, but I'll take a shot with that one on top. Bronze Lion by Central Banker from Asmussen. The numbers are light, but Central Banker is a pretty nice New York bred sire with win early types. Off a little bit of a layoff, I'm going to look for some improvement to him to maybe get closer to what the breeding kind of indicates. An Apex Predator, He's had plenty of opportunities, hasn't gotten it done yet, but I thought on the numbers as compared to the others who have been who have raced in here, maybe he's worth a look. So I had a 10-4, 1-6 on the 7th. Eighth race.
Go ahead. We got about 2 minutes.
Okay, eighth race, 7-5, 11-1. Dream Friend, just plenty of early speed. Hasn't been seen since last November, but the numbers fired then were very good. That said, this is a pretty competitive race, but I'll put him on top. Arthur Kitt comes out of a nice second-place finish down at Gulfstream to get the season started. So, again, maybe a little recency for that one will be beneficial. And then Hidden Scroll, I didn't know what to do with him, trying the turf after kind of throwing in the dud. But, I mean, clearly, he's brilliant. He's not brilliant. He's brilliant, so I didn't know what to do. But off the latest workouts, I had to have him in the mix as well. He'll make the race fun to watch to see what Hidden Scroll can do on the turf. Ninth, 3-1-4. I like Got Stormy coming out of the second place finish against the boys in the kill row. So I'll put that one over Rushing Fall, but that's a fun stake to open the meet. And the 10th and final, 7-1-4-3, Justice of War, gets a class drop that I think will be beneficial. Has raced a couple times this year. And again, with the class move, we'll throw that one on top. In the Loop is the morning line favorite. Clearly, there are a couple of races underneath that make this one you have to pay attention to. But the drop to 16, again, there's some red flags flying. Our Storm and Norman has numbers that are good enough to mix it up in here. So 7-1-4-3 in the 10th.
I'm glad you mentioned. I did not. In my first pass on the scratches, I did not catch up that 12 was that English Soul was out, and that is that's an important scratch. And I got to make a decision here now. Who the fourth in there is? I'm interested in Repatriated Gem as the price on the card. Seth, I appreciate it. I'll be watching you later this afternoon.
The more the merrier. Happy to have you on board, and anybody who wants to tune in, Capital OTB, TV, OTB Live. We'll see if we can pick some winners.
There you go. Seth Merrow, everybody. And a reminder that the whole spring meet opening week, today, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 5 days, 5% rebate on all your action through Naira Bets. And working on the scratches and the changes, and they're going to have to rework some things, so be it, no problem. And we'll get it changed at the website as quick as possible. We'll see if Nick has got any changes as well. All right? So we'll take care of that. Want to thank Seth and Steve Askin, Sid Fernando, Mike Beer with his first visit of the season of the year, actually. I don't think I talked to him during the winter. And Dave Bassler, looking ahead to tomorrow's opening day at Thistledown and at Belterra. Ohio kicks off tomorrow. Thanks to Deja on the board. And we'll send you out with one more today. One more. This gospel standard ain't going to let, actually a civil rights standard, ain't going to let nobody turn me around, sweet honey. Good luck today, everybody. We'll talk to you in the morning.
California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Business of Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.